T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
The number is spiking in Texas, hospitalizations, positivity rates up, and the number of cases up as mask orders are put into place and in some counties in Texas ignored. Data mining becomes a big part of the fight against COVID-19. That includes contact tracing. It's hard to do when numbers are spiking. Well, for one look at this, we asked Dr. Richard Besser to join us. He is currently the president and CEO of the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, former acting head of the Centers for Disease Control, and worked there for several years before that. We asked him, what about data mining and contact tracing?
Well, you know, Mitch, when you think about the value of contact tracing, what it's used for is when a community is switching from everyone staying at home to slowly, carefully getting the economy get back going. But in places where the number of cases each day are in the high hundreds or thousands, it's not possible for public health to keep up with that. That's something that you want to see in a place that's really made progress towards getting community transmission under control. And that has to be done, unfortunately, with things like stay-at-home orders. So, you know, here in New Jersey and New York and some of the Northeast states where the case numbers are down low, approaches, the traditional public health approach of testing, contact tracing, and then ensuring that everyone has what they need to isolate and quarantine, that can be really effective. But in places where the numbers are skyrocketing, that model just doesn't work.
One of the things we see, sheriffs saying they won't enforce Governor Abbott's order in Texas, some states doing contact tracing, some areas requiring masks with fines, other places don't ask for masks to be worn. One plan, a unified plan, would that help?
You know, Mitch, I think you're hitting one of the most important issues. Is we have to find a way to get on the same page across America that these measures, wearing masks, keeping 6 feet away, washing hands, staying home if we're sick, making sure people have the resources they need to protect themselves and their families, that these represent American values. Now, when I wear a mask, what I'm saying to you is I care about you and your health. And when you're wearing a mask, you're saying the same thing. And somehow we've gotten off track. And these things, which should be universal, have a political overtone to them. And they work. We've seen these measures work around the world. They can work here in America. And we have to find a way to come together as Americans to get this done.
And speaking of the masks, if you go into a store and the sign says no shirt, no shoes, no service, you stay clothed, I suppose. And if you go to a if you go to a construction site, the hard hat, safety goggles, maybe even steel-toed boots, and no one starts waving the Constitution. What is it about masks that has made us so divided?
Well, there are two narratives going on right now about the pandemic. You know, what you're hearing from, you know, every public health leader across the country and many of our political leaders, what you're hearing is that this is serious. We're in the early days of this pandemic. What we do can really make a difference, especially for, you know, older Americans and those with underlying medical problems that put them at risk, for essential workers who are on the front line every day, putting themselves at risk. What we do matters. That's one narrative. And the other narrative is there's nothing to worry about. It's overblown. Let's just get back to work and to our lives. And, you know, I understand the fatigue that people have with this pandemic. They want it to be over. They want to get kids back to school. They want to get back to work. And we all want that. But public health is the roadmap to getting there.
And then there are the mixed messages. I hear people say, well, the Surgeon General several months ago said masks weren't a good thing. And Dr. Fauci several months ago said that COVID-19 was not going to be a big deal. Their opinions have changed, but it has created yet another divide.
I ran emergency preparedness response at CDC for 4 years and led the agency during the start of the swine flu pandemic. And in every response that we were involved in, our guidance would change as we learned more information. And one of the things that was essential to our success was the ability to talk directly to the American people during a crisis so that the public could understand what we were learning. And when guidance changed, they could see it as a step towards progress rather than a flip-flop or an entity that didn't know what they were doing. That's the situation here with masks. We've always known that masks are very important in a healthcare setting, in people who are dealing directly with sick people in a hospital or a clinic. What we've learned here is that there's a fair amount of disease that's spread before anyone has any symptoms. And in places and countries where people are wearing masks, they're able to reduce the spread from people without symptoms to others. And that's driven the change here. And it's been an important change, but it's been one that's been difficult to communicate because CDC doesn't talk to the public every day, and there are different messages out there that are being raised up as this being an example of flip-flopping rather than an example of learning as we go.
And you headed the CDC for a while. It's become a political football.
Well, I think that the guidance that CDC put forward around school reopening is smart. It's evidence-based. We'll have to see what comes forward. If what they're providing is more clarity, that's great. What I would not want to see is guidance change based on political pressure. We all want to get kids back to school. I'm a pediatrician and a parent, and I know how critically important it is to children's development, to their physical and emotional and mental well-being to be in school. But we need to do it in a way that's safe. And we need to do it in a way that shows value and that we value every child in America. It's expensive to make the changes that are necessary for students, teachers, and staff to be safe. You want to make sure that the airflow is good. You want to make sure that classrooms are such that children can be spaced out and there can be some social distancing. You need to make sure you've got staff on board who can disinfect classrooms every night and staff who can screen students and teachers and staff when they come to school so that children and staff and teachers who are sick are not allowed to continue to be in the school. These things cost money. And in America, we tend to fund our school system through property taxes. So you can see going forward major disparities where wealthy communities are able to make these adjustments and get kids back to school, and lower income communities are not able to do so. So we need a big infusion of federal dollars so that that's not the case, so that we demonstrate that we value every child in America.
As the fight continues to find a way to get a handle on COVID-19, what is the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation's part in all of this?
Yeah, well, thank you for that. One of the things that we're really trying to do is raise up these issues of opportunity for health, who in America has it, who doesn't, and what policy changes need to be in place. We're very concerned this summer that support to everyday Americans is running out. Lower income Americans received checks to help them during the tough time, but one check for $1,200 only goes so far. Unemployed workers were getting federal supplemental income, and that expires this month. And so does protection against eviction and mortgage foreclosure. I know in Dallas that evictions are ramping up just at a time when people are more stressed than ever. The last thing you want is for someone to be homeless and have to isolate or quarantine. We need to find ways to forgive rent, to continue protections against evictions and foreclosures. These are areas that we're lifting up. How do we how do we ensure that the policies are in place so that the impact we've seen that's been so disparate, that's been so hard on Black Americans, Latino Americans, Native Americans, low-income Americans, how do we make sure that the past doesn't predict the future? We can do that. If it's important to us as a nation, we can come together and make that happen.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.